From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruriak. With President Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin meeting today in Finland, there have been, as you probably know, special reports throughout the morning and a joint news conference just finished. In that conference, a few of the highlights from President Trump saying there was no collusion, zero collusion were the words he used about the alleged relationship between Russia and the United States during the 2016 election. President Putin responded with, "Can you name a single fact of collusion?" He said, "There is no evidence. It's utter nonsense." Joining us now, as he does almost every Monday, the political junkie Ken Rudin. He is based near Washington, D.C. He, too, has watched this press conference. Hello, Ken.
Good morning, Beth. I am exhausted watching this.
Yeah.
Exhausted.
Well, add some more perspective to this meeting. And besides listening to the words, there was the body language. There was the tone of the journalists taking on these two presidents. I think a lot was revealed in this press conference.
Well, I think so, too. I mean, there was so many questions going into the meeting or the summit or whatever you want to call it, given the fact that the president had just spent all his time. The president was talking, basically denigrating NATO allies, complaining that they weren't paying their fair share of defense. He criticized Theresa May, the Prime Minister of Britain, about her Brexit strategy. There was criticism of Germany about the gas lines to Russia. So a lot of criticism going into this meeting with Putin, and yet there was nary a criticism of the Russian leader at all, saying, "I hope to have a strong relationship. I trust him. I support him. I think there will be good for our two countries." So once again, it just shows that the president either is doing Putin's bidding. I mean, if you want to take a conspiracy theories a little bit, but there's no question what he's doing is dividing American allies, dividing NATO at the expense of trying to get a stronger relationship with Putin.
I think as you and other people heard, the president, meaning President Trump, had opportunities to step forward boldly and be specific, to criticize, to denounce, to ask for a change in strategy. And there was an expectation, if you're talking about expectations, that he would do that. The fact that he didn't and the fact that he extended blame that could be shared everywhere, I think is one of those statements that, as I said, is not only revealing, but a statement that's going to be heard around the world by allies, too.
Well, you know, something that was interesting, right at the end of the press conference, Anderson Cooper of CNN said, his words were, "You've just seen the most disgraceful performance by a U.S. president." In the New York Times this morning, columnist Charles Blow wrote, "Trump is, the words is exact quote, Trump is a traitor and may well be treasonous. There is more and more discussions about what Trump's real goals are and what he's trying to accomplish." That is the kind of words you're hearing out of Charles Blow or Anderson Cooper is unprecedented. But at the same time, it is unprecedented to see the president of the United States asked at a press conference, "Whom do you believe regarding the Russian meddling in the 2016 campaign? Do you believe your own intelligence agencies or do you believe Putin?" And Trump's answer is, "What about Hillary Clinton's emails?" That was an astounding response. I mean, I'm not describing it exactly word for word, but in essence, that's exactly what happened. He spoke about the server, Hillary's emails, the FBI's malfeasance, nothing about criticizing Russia or Putin.
We'll go back to looking at the video, and every time he brought up the 2016 election, the fact that he won, how big he won by, about the Hillary Clinton campaign, and watch the body language almost eye-rolling by President Putin. He would move his head back, he would shift his body around, and just the level of content, the tone, and the difference between the two presidents was so remarkable. I want to go to a soundbite by President Trump, and this is some of his discussion in that arena of collusion.
"There was nobody to collude with. There was no collusion with the campaign. And every time you hear all of these, you know, 12 and 14, it's stuff that has nothing to do. And frankly, they admit these are not people involved in the campaign. But to the average reader out there, they're saying, well, maybe that does. It doesn't. And even the people involved, some perhaps told misstories, although in one case, the FBI said there was no lie. There was no lie. Somebody else said there was. We ran a brilliant campaign, and that's why I'm president. Thank you.
All right, Ken, the important highlight from President Putin about all of that is where President Putin was on this election and who he wanted to win. And that is worth listening to again as he was asked and as he said this.
And did you direct any of your officials to help him do that?
Yes, I did. Because he talked about bringing the U.S.-Russia relationship back to normal.
Yes, he did. Is him saying that he did, in fact, want President Trump to win. That's what he had been set up for. So it's a little cloudy, not in the context of the entire conversation, but can take it from there because I think you get my point.
Well, yes. Look, in fairness, there is no proof, or at least we haven't seen it from Robert Mueller yet, who is examining this. But there is no proof that the Trump campaign colluded with Russia during the campaign. There's no proof of that. But there seems to be unquestioned evidence that Russia did what it can to defeat Hillary Clinton by the leaking of the DNC emails, by the leaking of the Hillary Clinton campaign staff and campaign manager emails, through everything they did on Facebook and Twitter and social media. It seemed clear that Russia did everything it could to defeat Hillary Clinton with fake tweets and fake posts on social media. So did Trump take advantage of it? Probably. Was he involved in it specifically? That has not been proven. But as far as the question, whom did Moscow prefer in the election, there seems to be no question whatsoever.
Ken, as a political junkie, I'd like to get your opinion on something the president said. He was putting the context of the relationship with Russia into, I guess, the relationship of all time. And he characterized it this way.
But our relationship has never been worse than it is now. However, that changed as of about 4 hours ago. I really believe that. Nothing would be easier politically than to refuse to meet, to refuse to engage, but that would not accomplish anything. As president, I cannot make decisions on foreign policy in a futile effort to appease partisan critics or the media or Democrats who want to do nothing but resist and obstruct.
I couldn't help but think, Ken, how you and the millions of students of history heard that statement by the president, that the relationship has never been worse than it is now up until 4 hours ago.
Well, first of all, I mean, that is one of the things that resulted in the absolute head shaking on my part. It reminded me of what he said with North Korea in Singapore summit with Kim Jong Un, who basically he said that there's no longer a threat. There's no longer a nuclear threat from North Korea. And he said this on the basis of a conversation he had with Kim for a couple of hours. To say that, one, that the relationship with Russia has never been worse. And of course, anybody who remembers the Cuban Missile Crisis or anything else in the past, I think it's kind of ridiculous. But the fact is that whatever, how bad it was, he has blamed it on President Obama. But now he's saying that in the last 4 hours, that's suddenly fine. It's all gone away. It's like it's almost a fantasy land response to what this meeting was. I mean, first of all, we have no reporters who were there. We just have the translators. President Trump could say whatever he wants about this conversation. But to say that this is one of the worst relationship we've ever had with Russia, and now because of this conversation in 4 hours, it's all gotten better. It is just remarkable. And again, it's not so much. To me, it's not even how Putin may react to what the president has to say. I'd love to hear what Congress the response is. Will Republicans continue to serenade the president with whatever he has to say about Russia? I mean, when I saw the House Intelligence Committee go after the FBI last week in such a way that was almost a disgrace and an embarrassment in its apparent willingness to protect the president, this is the Republican Party that once stood up for something as far as being tough on the Soviet Union, being tough on international relations. And they seem more willing and more eager to protect the president than to protect the United States. It's just, I mean, that's why I think Anderson Cooper called it disgraceful, because there's never been a performance by the president in foreign relations, in my memory, certainly, and a performance by his own party to acquiesce in what the president has been saying, something I've never seen before.
I'm talking with Ken Rudin, the political junkie, and we are referencing a joint press conference that happened within the last, it just wrapped up in about 20 minutes ago, with President Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin. In answering a question by Reuters journalist Jeff Mason, President Trump said, just to put a final note to what we're talking about here, U.S. foolishness, stupidity, and the Mueller probe caused the breakdown in the relationship. We're all to blame, and I'm paraphrasing him, but he said, it should have been started, meaning repairing the relationship, before I came into office. And then he took a moment to say the probe is a disaster for our country. To be fair, collusion is only one third of the overall investigation by Robert Mueller.
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, as we've seen with so many of the indictments, especially the 12 of the Russian intelligence officials last Friday, it's not all about collusion. And as I said earlier, there may be no collusion. But insofar as what Moscow wanted to happen, the result that the Kremlin was pushing for, it seems no question by all these indictments, by all information, by all accounts by U.S. intelligence agencies that the Russia got the result of the election they had wanted. They wanted Donald Trump. They did not want Hillary Clinton. They did everything they can to ensure that thing. So in some ways, it almost doesn't matter whether Trump worked with the Russians on it. Certainly what the Russians did benefited Trump in every possible way.
Overall, the joint press conference started with this tone of stating the cooperation, the willingness to work together on nuclear disarmament, on anti-terrorism. And in Syria, where President Putin said Syria could be the first showcase example of cooperation, he said, in general, we are glad with the outcome, and I hope we start to understand each other better. So we could spend a lot of... Go ahead, Ken.
I was just going to say, think of all the months of the carnage and slaughter that's been going on in Syria, aided and abetted by Moscow.
Years.
So to say that maybe we're coming to some kind of agreement on Syria, it certainly took a long time and a lot of deaths for that to happen.
Until this summit, we would have focused this conversation on the naming of Brett Kavanaugh as President Trump's nominee to the U.S. Supreme Court. You and I haven't talked since that happened. Can we just do a checkpoint on that, and if there's anything new on the confirmation plan at this point?
Nothing new. Look, the fact is that Chuck Schumer, the leader of the Democrats in the Senate, said that the Democrats are going to do everything they can to make life miserable for Brett Kavanaugh. But I don't see, because there's no longer a filibuster, they don't have the numbers in the Senate, there's no indication that any Republican is going to vote no, and there is an indication that some Democrats may vote yes. I don't see how the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh can be stopped as much as Chuck Schumer and others in the Democratic Party would like it to happen.
Finally, let's talk a little California politics, because it's making national news. Longtime Senator Dianne Feinstein getting a whopping no confidence vote from her statewide party. You saw those numbers over the weekend, right?
I don't know if it surprised me. We've seen Dianne Feinstein, as we've seen it when she ran for governor of California in 1990. She was also defeated. But the party was different then. The party was still more moderate than it was now. I mean, maybe Dianne Feinstein was more centrist than she is now. She has certainly moved to the left in response to Donald Trump. Although last year she did say things that she urged Democrats to have patience with Trump, that I could work with him. But obviously that's probably what started that Kevin DeLeon challenge to her, that that she was too cautious, too willing to work with Trump. And she didn't not reflect the anger that many Democrats have. But as we saw during the June primary, remember, Feinstein got 44% of the vote. De Leon got 12% of the vote. The entire Democratic establishment seems like has lined up behind Feinstein, Jerry Brown, Kamala Harris, Gavin Newsom, others. So, yes, she was embarrassed by the state party over the weekend. Yes, you know, I mean, we're talking about 333 delegates compared to 8.4 million Democrats statewide. I don't think this affects the November election. Maybe it's a blip. Maybe it shows that De Leon is doing better with Latino voters and more progressives. But I still don't see how her reelection to another term is endangered in any way. But she did get a thumping, as you say, at the state convention.
Yeah, let me just cover those numbers. So 217 delegates voted for Kevin De Leon. He's a Democrat. He's from Los Angeles. 22 only cast ballots for Dianne Feinstein, but there were 94 that voted for no endorsement. She didn't think an endorsement vote should be taken at all. She said the party should just let the voters decide. Going back to the primary, which you mentioned, Kevin De Leon had about 800,000 votes. Dianne Feinstein had almost 3 million.
And let's not forget about the money in the bank, which is also important. It doesn't always determine the winner. Hillary Clinton outspent Donald Trump by a lot of money in 2016. But, you know, for the record, Feinstein has about $7 million in the bank. De Leon maybe has less than $1 million. Perhaps the endorsement over the weekend could bring more money to his coffers, but ultimately, you're not going to give money to somebody who you don't think is going to win. And right now, the polls, I mean, maybe things could have been changing. Maybe the endorsement could help him in some way. But right now, again, with less than 4 months to go before the election, it's hard to see how much he's catching up in time to beat her on November 6th.
And you are right, the endorsement does mean a boost to his campaign financially in that they will spend more money promoting his candidacy this fall. Before I let you go, Ken, let's talk about the other California senator, the new senator, Kamala Harris, which the New York Times has stepped out to say, yeah, she's going to run for president. What do you think?
Look, you know, something, the real question is when somebody says who's running and you have to stop, is it? I mean, yes, it's Elizabeth Warren and there's Bernie Sanders and there's, you know, and Joe Biden. And Joe Biden is 75. Bernie Sanders, I think, is 105. No, of course he's not. But the point is, Kamala Harris is the new blood of the Democratic Party. She seems to be, from everything she says, she seems to be very conscious of her national image and perhaps looking at 2020. So when I think of young Democratic prospects, I think of Kamala Harris. I think of Kirsten Gillibrand, the senator from New York. I think of people like that who are
Cory Booker. You have to add that to
Cory Booker. Certainly, they're winning over new audiences. Do they play nationwide? Do they win in the heartland? Do they get back the voters in Iowa and Wisconsin and Michigan and Ohio? That's the real question. And we have, you know, the midterms in 4 months, and then we have 2 years to go after that to see how much of appeal they have. But right now, they have to be listed as among the front runners. I can't believe we're talking about that word in 2018, but certainly among the front runners for 2020.
Well, put Elizabeth Warren right up there and then repeat your questions about where her candidacy will play to. And yeah, I think it's going to be a fascinating campaign cycle. Donald Trump, just going back to the conference, repeated over and over, where is the server? Where is the server? I don't want to talk about the story and not bring that question up. We don't spend much time on that. But is that a question that's going to get an answer, Ken?
But he's been asking that for where are Hillary Clinton's 33,000 emails? Oh, you know, I mean, when people are listening to Trump talk about the server, that has nothing to do with what the intelligence agencies are saying about Russian involvement in 2016. So,
okay, thank you. You just answered it.
Okay. That's what I did.
Exactly what I thought you were going to say. Ken, it's always a pleasure. This is one of those days when we could fill the hour. So thanks for giving us so much time today.
See you next week, Beth.
He is Ken Rudin, the political junkie. You can find a link to his website at capradio.org. You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio.